Good afternoon from Oslo, Norway. This is iFaith 108. We're in the book of Daniel. Last time we looked at the three statues. The statue of the Babylonian king's dream, the statue he set up, the statue of gold, as though to counteract the dream, and then maybe statues that we're setting up in our own lives. Here in iFaith 108, the message is called The Writing on the Wall, and it's from Daniel 5. Actually, the classes really have something in common. Because chapters 2 and 3, is it all about me? Is it all about the state or not? Chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar has another opportunity. He has a dream. Daniel interprets it. But in Daniel 5, we have his successor, Belshazzar. And Belshazzar is not doing something very wise. Let's begin to read. King Belshazzar gave a great banquet for thousands of his nobles and drank wine with them. And while Belshazzar was drinking wine, he gave orders to bring in the gold and silver goblets Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken from the temple in Jerusalem. Just wait a second. They're bringing in gold and silver drinking cups from the Jerusalem temple, which, remember, was sacked and then destroyed by the Babylonians decades earlier. And what was the purpose? It says, so that his kings, nobles, wives, concubines, that's like a secondary wife, so that they might drink from them. So they want to get drunk using the utensils that were in the Jerusalem temple. So they brought in the gold, and as they drank the wine, and this makes it even worse, they praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. So this is outrageous. We're in the throne room, or we're in a banqueting hall. And what is the king doing, King Belshazzar? He's having a big party using these captured gold and silver cups. Suddenly, the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale, and he was so frightened his legs became weak and his knees were knocking. Then the king summoned the enchanters, astrologers, and diviners, and he said to these wise men, "Whoever reads this writing and tells me what it means will," basically he says, "you'll have great honors." But they couldn't. No one could. And so the king becomes even more afraid. His face grows more pale. His nobles are baffled. There's no help from the wise men. Because the world, whether it's worldly religion or philosophy or pseudoscience like astrology, the world has no help. But the queen is smart, and she suggests they call for Daniel. And he will tell you what the writing means. So Daniel was brought before the king. The king said to him, "Are you Daniel, one of the exiles my father the king brought from Judah? I've heard the spirit of the gods is in you and that you have insight, intelligence, and outstanding wisdom. The wise men and enchanters were brought before me to read this writing and tell me what it means, but they could not explain it. Now, I've heard you're able to give interpretations and to solve difficult problems. And if you can read this writing, basically he'll be given all kinds of honors." Well, Daniel's not interested in the honors. He actually is even offered the number 3 position in Babylon. Why number 3? Because Belshazzar is actually number 2. The real king is out of town for a few years. But here's Daniel's answer. "You may keep your gifts for yourself and give your rewards to someone else. Nevertheless, I will read the writing for the king and tell him what it means. Your Majesty, the Most High God gave your father Nebuchadnezzar sovereignty and greatness and glory and splendor. But when his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride, he was deposed from his royal throne and stripped of his glory. He was driven away from people and given the mind of an animal. He lived with wild donkeys and ate grass like the ox. His body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he acknowledged the Most High God as sovereign over all the kingdoms on earth." And this is a reference to chapter 4, which we didn't read, but in which King Nebuchadnezzar loses his sanity, acts like an animal, thinks he's a cow or an ox for some time, and finally his sanity is restored when he admits that God is sovereign, the true God in heaven. So there's really no excuse for Belshazzar, because Nebuchadnezzar has had dreams. Nebuchadnezzar was even reduced to being like an animal. And Belshazzar, these lessons were wasted on him. Daniel continues, "But you, Belshazzar, his son, have not humbled yourself, although you knew all this." Instead, what happened? Instead, you have basically, you've worshipped iron, silver, gold. You've made idols. You know, these idols, they don't understand anything. And you didn't honor God, and that's why he sent the hand with the inscription. Now, this is interesting. We're near the end of the chapter, Daniel 5:25. This was the inscription, "Mene, mene, tekel, uparsin." Words we may not recognize, sure. here's what these words mean. Mene, God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Peres, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. You may notice these words sound somewhat familiar. Mene is like a mina, a unit of coin we read about in the Bible. Tekel is like shekel. Peres is like the word Persians. And so Daniel is able to interpret it, and at Belshazzar's command, he's clothed in purple and a gold chain is placed around his neck, and he's third highest ruler in the kingdom. So it's kind of a playful inscription, although it's dead serious. It's three different units of money. For example, here in my hand, I have a denarius. This is 1,800 years old. Not that old compared to the story of Daniel, because it's actually 800 years too young. But the shekel, the mina, you've heard of these things before. But the lesson is not about coins. The clever way that the inscription is worded is to make people remember. And what the king does after this, he gives honors to Daniel. This is just something he did. He acknowledges the truth, technically, but presumably without the right heart. And then we read finally, that very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain. And Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. I'm 62. Well, right now I am. The historians, ancient historians Herodotus and Xenophon, both speak of a night attack, that the Babylonians were feasting, they were having a party, revelry. This would have been when Belshazzar was getting drunk out of the gold goblets from the temple. And at that time, there was a night attack, and basically without a fight, Babylon gives up. The alliance of Medes and Persian, the Medo-Persian alliance, takes over. Babylon falls that quickly because God is in control of the nations. Now, there's more we could say here. The truth is, the writing on the wall is a well-known expression in many languages. It means that it should be obvious that this isn't working, that something bad is going to happen. It's clear. The writing on the wall appears when we honor ourselves above God. Now, there are more exciting and inspiring stories in Daniel. I definitely recommend reading chapter 6. Though, honestly, chapters 7 to 12 are very difficult. And I've just gone through them again. I don't know how many times I've gone through them. But certainly, they show us that on the international scene, the sovereign God, Yahweh, is sovereign. He's in control. So let's talk about application here. Do we see the writing on the wall? I mean, do we even notice it? Let alone, are we able to interpret it and apply it? What about our culture? Western civilization is descending more and more into love of pleasure and into narcissism. I'm standing here in the middle of a park in one of the major cities of Europe, where my wife and I have lived for many years in these different countries. It reminds me of a passage in 2 Timothy 3. Mark this, there'll be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, ungrateful, without love, unforgiving, without self-control, not lovers of the good, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, outward, but denying its power, that's the inward, had nothing to do with such people. 2 Timothy 3 describes the last days, that is, the time on earth between the giving of the Spirit at Pentecost after Jesus' resurrection until the end, and things get bad. And they may not feel bad because we're so comfortable in this life, but they are. Western civilization is descending more and more into these things. And analysts, some sociologists, other intellectuals see the writing on the wall. And they know this can't last forever. The Western world is getting softer and softer. How about our churches? Let's apply it to the church level. Maybe we're going on blithely, unaware, blissfully, hoping things will get better, wishfully thinking, although churches aren't doing well, they're shrinking. Are people really following Christ? Are we becoming more insular? I think there are all kinds of signs. Are leaders growing? Are they setting the example in the areas where they should set the example? Are they continuing to learn? Are they taking seriously the need for continuing education? Are they open to outside influence, to feedback, or if things become closed? These are the kinds of questions. Is our world being impacted because of the church, or is it more in spite of the church? It's more because some people have done some good things. Is the writing on the wall? I hope you're not in one of those churches where it is on the wall. But But if it is, read it, read the evidence, and be honest about where things are. Don't just do some quick response, some quick revival, the kind of last-minute effort that Belshazzar did before he died on that fateful night when the Persians took over Babylon. Don't do that, but be realistic and be real. And I speak of the writing on the wall with respect to our culture, our churches. How about our lives? What kind of trajectory are you and I on? Are we growing? Are we learning? Are we changing? Are we more faithful, more observant? We love Jesus more each year or less? Are we drifting? See, the writing may be on the wall. Don't try to figure out yourself. Have a friend interpret it for you, someone who you trust, someone like Daniel. You see, Belshazzar, in an orgy of pleasure-seeking, dishonored Yahweh, getting drunk with the temple vessels. Could I be disrespecting the God of heaven somehow? Aware or not, perhaps I'm profaning what is sacred in my thoughts, in my actions, in what I do or fail to do, in what I say or fail to say. Belshazzar had his judgment day. That time in 539 BC, that was judgment day for him. Well, the truth is, there'll be another judgment day for him and for all of us, the last judgment. Do I believe this? Do I take it seriously? Or is religion just something I add on to my comfortable life? Do I see the writing on the wall? When someone who speaks the truth, someone I trust, interprets the truth, do I listen? Do I ignore the message? Maybe I'm afraid. Maybe my knees are knocking together and I'm shaking and turning white and my skin. But am I willing to change, or am I just worried about it? There's a difference. If I've done wrong, like Belshazzar, am I genuinely afraid? Or do I just perform some quick action to make up for it? Or do I truly turn, repent, and care and seek God's will? The writing on the wall doesn't have to be final, doesn't have to be conclusive if we have the will to change. But if we've lost the will to change, then sadly, the writing on the wall is conclusive. It's definitive, and we don't have much time left. Let's be open to truth. Goodbye from Norway. I hope this lesson makes a difference. Next time, we'll get into the book of Ezra.